You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Well, another evening of enchanting coffee conversation begins.
Always.
And, you know, unfortunately, though, I want to start, you know, tonight's conversation out with a poll that I just saw from Fox News that is somewhat distressing. And that is that 49% of the Fox News voters that were polled believe that President Trump should be impeached. And 6 out of 10 people feel that he did ask foreign leaders to investigate political opponents, and 2/3 of those people say that if so, they felt that those actions were completely inappropriate. So almost half of the Fox News people polled, and that tends to be a conservative, you know, media outlet, are kind of thumbs down on the President of the United States. And I just wanted to have that discussion.
Well, you know what? I don't buy that poll because just today I saw another poll that was very different from that. So I think that what's happening, Ron, is that people, again, are reacting to sound bites. And all we hear right now is shifty shifts, sound bites that are just what he wants people to hear. So, and the media is doing the same thing. So they're accomplishing the goal that they want to accomplish. When the truth comes out, as it should, then it's going to be a different story. And I think, too, that people are, you know, I think that there's a percentage of the population that's like, man, I really, really like President Trump, but I'm so tired of all of this nonsense going on and all of this fighting and infighting going on, that maybe we just should, you know, get rid of him and get somebody else in there so we don't have all this fighting, which is a really bad thing to do, because when you give up and you don't fight the fight that you need to fight, then you lose the war. So I don't tend to buy that poll because I don't believe that people have the information. And don't forget, go backwards in history a moment to the whole Russia thing, where everybody thought that Trump must have something to do with Russia, and he didn't. But it's all because that's what the news tells you to think.
Well, you know, that's a good comment that you made, and I think it's an accurate comment, because, you know, I have to deal with statistics all the time in research, and the important thing is that research has to be vetted. Okay, so it has to be confirmed. There have to be controls and things like that. But polls don't have those things. And I don't think most people that, you know, pay attention to polls understand that polls don't really have any controls. There are a series of probative questions where people give responses to. Have you ever been called up on the phone by a polling organization? Well, I mean, I have several times, unfortunately.
I have too, and here's what I'll say, that the way that they ask the question matters to your answer.
Absolutely.
So the way that they ask the question leads you to an answer that they want to elicit. And, you know, I mean, they're just patently unfair. So I'm not buying this. I think that the majority, I'll tell you what, Ron, everybody that I talk to thinks that this is baloney and thinks that the president is being just absolutely mistreated, as I think. And I'm not talking to anybody that says, oh yeah, that guy did this and that. Nobody thinks anything about it. And you know, when you look at the Nancy Pelosi comments about how they're really, oh my goodness, this is serious and we're doing the people's work, and you look at the same situation when Clinton was being impeached, she had a completely different take on it. So, you know, this is just so much media stuff in here.
Well, you know, I see it all, and we've had these conversations before. I mean, I see it all as political theater. And if Nancy Pelosi gets up in front of the cameras, as she has on numerous occasions, as well as Shifty Adam Schiff. And they say, well, we're doing the work of the American people. We're doing the work that the American people want us to do. No, you're not. You're not doing the work. And all anybody with half a sense in their brain would do if they wanted to find out if these people are really doing the work of the American people is that compare and contrast the issues that are pressing issues in the United States of America, like immigration, like poverty, like economics, like trade, like employment, manufacturing jobs, like energy, our relationships with China, our relationships with North Korea, and the serious challenges. Yeah, and immigration being number one. And those are the concerns of the American people. Tell me, what piece of legislation have Congress passed?
And they haven't even passed the Mexican-Canada agreement, which is so frustrating.
Because over a year old.
The other two countries passed it, and we're supposed to be the leader, and we are obstructing this entire process.
And you know, it's funny that you bring up the Mexican-Canada-American trade, agreement that's over a year old that President Trump and his administration renegotiated. That all they need to do is pass it.
Yeah.
That's all they need to do. They need to get in and spend an hour in Congress. Everybody knows, you know, the issues. They've been thoroughly supposed to be researching these issues for over a year now, and then sit down and vote on it and bring tens of thousands of jobs to the United States of America, and billions, we're talking billions, tens of billions of dollars in trade favoring all three of those countries. Mexico will make out well, the United States will make out well, and Canada will make out well. And most importantly, the American people will make out well. And they haven't done anything.
Well, they're doing a disservice not only to America, but to Canada and to Mexico. And I'm embarrassed again of our Congress. They are a do-nothing Congress that is only going to be remembered for how many things they did against the president,
correct,
but nothing for the country.
And you know, and I want to switch to the next topic that I have, and that is that notice how the Democrat candidates for the presidency are dropping out.
Well, okay, that's going to happen.
Absolutely. But I think they're dropping out sooner than I would have expected them to drop out because they don't have the resonance of the American people and they don't have the funding.
Well, they have so many candidates that they all have to drop out save one at the end. So right now...
Right now, Beto O'Rourke, first person to drop out.
Yeah.
And it looks like...
riddance to Beto.
They don't even like him here in Texas,
no,
for God's sake.
No, not at all.
Okay, outside of his district, I mean, not a lot of people care about Beto O'Rourke. But anyway, so Kamala Harris from California, looks like she's releasing... she's closing down campaign offices, mm-hmm, in different states, and she's releasing staff. And, her primary staff members are already looking for other employment. And it's the same with Julio Castro,
right,
who's been he's kind of creepy. Okay. But he's been a very vociferous Democratic candidate against President Trump.
He and
Trump.
His brother are
they're
disliked
losers.
In Texas.
Total losers. And disliked,
yeah,
like you said.
So we have no respect for them. So I'm glad that they're gone. And, you know, I mean, on the ropes are a number of, really most of the other candidates are really on the ropes to continue. So right now the way that it looks is that Elizabeth Warren is going to be sticking around. Bernie is dropping down. He'll be sticking around for a little while.
And I think he's number three.
And Buttigieg, he thinks that he's going to end up in the top two. And we'll see. Biden is struggling a lot.
He's in number four.
So there's your top. There's your four right there. And the rest of them are all going to go away. But we'll talk about them as they go away. And
yeah,
they will. But what I also want to talk about as far as the presidential campaign, as long as you're on the subject, a lot has been made of Elizabeth Warren's, her platform with the Medicare. And you know how I feel about that. I just feel that it's a complete disaster. And talk about the rule of unforeseen circumstances. I mean, we will just have a nightmare of healthcare if she does this. And if she decides to, of course, she can't do it unilaterally, right? Because you're going to have enough people in the Congress and Senate to pass it. But her whole thing about, you know, making the Medicare for all and taking away all of our insurances, you just will not have people coming in to be physicians anymore. And right now, what we're also seeing, Ron, is in a lot of states, Medicare is no longer being accepted by physicians or by a number of physicians. So what's happening to people who are on Medicare is their pool of physicians is slimming and slimming, which makes it harder to get doctor appointments, which is kind of the thing that happened, you know, to our veterans, right? So it's the same type of thing where what they've just done is they've reduced the amount of money again to what doctors get for your Medicare visit. So they don't want to take that when they could take a patient that's paying or an insurance company that's paying. So you have to think about, there certainly are a lot of people that go into medicine because they aspire to treat people and they have, you know, all these good intentions. But the fact is that people also have to make a living and they put out all that money and they go to school and they become a doctor and they treat people and they expect to be paid for that. And they have to pay their staff and they have to pay all their insurance for, you know, so nobody's going to want to do that. So what doctors are you going to have to go to anymore?
Well, you know, you're exactly right. And, you know, of course, we have one of our former employees who recently became a physician, and God bless him, and I just love him to death, and he's just the perfect person to be a physician. He cares about people. He's got wonderful bedside manner. He's just a great guy, okay? And I helped him, you know, a lot prepare for, you know, his oral interviews to get into medical school. A good medical school, too, by the way, USC. And I'll tell you what, I couldn't be more proud of him. But you know what? I was talking with him last year. He's, you know, had completed his residency, so he's a physician now. And I said, so what are you looking at walking out of medical school? And he says, somewhere between $350,000 and $400,000 in debt. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, his parents are helping him. Thank God. He couldn't do it without that. But I'm saying, my God, the average doctor, you know, walks out of medical school was probably something like at least a quarter of $1 million
right.
dollars in debt. And you're absolutely right. You know, they want to start up a practice. A lot of guys want to be sort of country doctors now. They want to go back to holistic, you know, more of the holistic kind of doctor thing, you know, where they go work in the country or they go work in an urban area and give back to their communities. But my God, you got to pay them.
Well, the truth anymore is that doctors cannot afford to be in business by themselves.
Exactly.
We used to have lots of doctors that have their doctor office, and that's where we'd go.
Right.
Now they're in groups, and they have to be in groups just so that they can afford to pay things like the medical
well, the insurance, for God's sake.
That they
it's
have
crazy.
To pay. But Elizabeth Warren's plan, which would cost $52 trillion over 10 years, we cannot pay that.
And you know what? And I want you to continue, but I just want people to try to wrap their arms around how much money $52 trillion with a T dollars is.
Well, it's virtually impossible to be paid. So many other things are going to happen that they're not talking about, though, with this program. There's just too much to even talk about. First of all, it's going to throw 100 million people off of their current employer-sponsored insurance.
Okay, so imagine what it would be like to have 100 million Americans thrown off their current insurance.
Well, they're going to get Medicare. So now they're all going to, all the doctors are, I guess, going to have to take Medicare. I don't know how that's going to
work. Well, what are they going to do with the doctors? Because you just talked about the fact that less and less doctors are accepting Medicare. And we've experienced that. Thank God here in Texas, we were able to find a really great hospital that we're working with, you know, for all of our medical needs. But not all people are going to be as fortunate as we are. Well, and we were pretty worried about that.
And we're not going to be as fortunate either, because people like where we go are going to be flooded. And you're not going to even be able to get in. I mean, as it is now, it takes quite a long time to get an appointment. So the thing is that when you put the federal government in charge of your health care, that is the worst thing that you can do to the American people.
You don't think,
they don't do anything well.
Exactly. Okay, you just said it. I was going to say, please name one governmental agency or organization that has made anything better. Okay.
No, I can't think of one. And then you're going to put 2 million people who work in the insurance business out of work. So you're going to put 2 million people out of work. And Elizabeth Warren says, well, they'll just find jobs in the government system. So let's add 2 million more employees to the federal government system where they can have their pensions that we all pay for. This is just not going to work.
And look at what you've done. Is that you've nationalized insurance. Okay,
oh, yeah.
You've nationalized it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a horrible thing to do.
So there's really no big plan to pay for this $52 trillion except for to raise taxes on every company and every person and, you know, extremely tax the wealthy. And then what you do is you destroy incentive in this country. This would be run like when you're a kid and you make a big stack of blocks. It's going to be knocking that bottom block out and everything else is going to tumble down from it.
And name one country model, nationalized health care system. Name one that is successful. You know, Bernie Sanders a couple of years ago was pointing towards the country of Finland. Okay, well, guess what? Just this past year, the Finnish government went bankrupt.
Yeah.
And they went bankrupt because of what? Because they nationalized health care.
Well, they're going to put Warren's proposal also says, you know, there's going to be new wealth taxes, taxes on business, new payroll taxes on employers, which is going to stop employers from hiring. Okay, so then you're going to have an employment problem. And then you're going to have trillions of dollars in healthcare spending she is going to cut. So then you're going to have rationing of your healthcare and increased healthcare wait times, which will cause people to have more serious illnesses and death.
And that's the Canadian model,
yes.
Which is a failure. And that's why you see so many Canadians sneaking across the border, legally, but coming across the border and getting healthcare services in the United States of America. And let me just say one thing else. You keep talking about taxing the wealthy, and that's a gimme. Obviously, the wealthy are going to be severely taxed. But don't think for a minute that with $52 trillion Medicare program nationalizing the healthcare system, that the middle class is not going to be severely taxed as a result of it. How can they get away from being severely taxed? Hey, listen, I want to continue this conversation right after this cup of coffee.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to responsetoactiveshooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, responsetoactiveshooter.com, and be safe out there.
Well, I'm still on a roll about this health care because it makes me really angry what Elizabeth Warren's proposal is. And part of her proposal also is it will put less money in the hands of doctors, so their rates will be dramatically reduced. Less money in the hands of hospitals and other healthcare providers, so we will have less money to spend on things like technology, MRI machines, buying new medical equipment, investing in infrastructure like hospitals and things like that. We won't have the money. We will have fewer providers to treat more people. And by the way, her plan includes illegal aliens, Ron. So they will also get served under this, and we will all be paying for it.
And that's 27 million people in the United States of America. We are going to be providing tax-based free medical services for 27 million illegal aliens. Can you imagine the trillions of dollars that that's going to cost?
Well, our medical system will go to hell in a handbasket. In Canada, from the time that you get to finally see a general practitioner, and maybe you need to see a specialist, between the time that you see that general practitioner and the specialist, your average wait time is 5 months. You can die in 5 months.
You can die in 1 month.
If you have an infection, if you have a fast-moving cancer, if you have all kinds of different things, they will only be made worse by this. Our health care will be so bad. We cannot afford to vote for Elizabeth Warren. And she scares the heck out of me, Ron, because people think that getting this Medicare for everybody just sounds so great. And let the rich people pay for it. Let me tell you that rich people don't ever just pay for anything. It's the rich people who employ people. And if they can't employ people because they're paying so much for their health care, they will employ less people. Besides losing our doctors, which we absolutely will, besides having long waits, we will have severe unemployment caused by this.
Well, you know, one of the things that's rapidly growing in the industry, in the medical healthcare industry, are doctors that are really scared about these issues and not getting paid. And what they're doing is they're forming up into groups that provide concierge medical services. And so, you know, you're paying for your regular insurance, but then if you pay a few thousand dollars a year, depending on the group's plan, the private group's plan, you can get concierge medical services. And we've even looked into that ourselves.
Yes.
But people don't make what we make. You know, not everybody makes what we make. So we can definitely afford to do concierge medical services.
Well, it wasn't expensive. It was surprisingly inexpensive.
Right. It was actually almost the same amount of money as what we would have gotten charged as a penalty for not using the Obama healthcare system.
Exactly. So
right?
It wasn't.
So you
it
might
wasn't.
As well do the yeah. concierge medical.
It wasn't what people think. But, you know, what I mean, one more interesting thing about healthcare, and then I'll move on, is just very recently, another U.S. district judge blocked one of President Trump's orders, which was that he wanted to restrict visas for people that didn't have health insurance, that had no way to pay for their own health insurance, that were coming into this country. And again, an Obama-type judge blocked this so that he can't do that. And all that President Trump is saying is, hey, if you're going to come in here and you want to get a visa, you need to be able to prove that you can, you know, take care of your own health care, that we're not going to have to do it for you. And the judge blocked it.
You know what's wrong about this? And this is this judicial activism, this political judicial activism that you and I talk about from time to time. The people, when they're in their other countries, before they get to the United States of America, they have no civil rights in the United States of America because they're in a foreign land. They only get their civil rights whether they cross the border legally or illegally. Then, according to our Bill of Rights, the way our Constitution is written, then they get the civil rights, whether they're here legally or illegally. And so it is totally appropriate for President Trump to try to or to mandate that they have to have certain requisites before they get into the United States of
Absolutely.
America because they have no civil rights. And so what this judge is doing, and he's an activist, is that he is providing them with civil rights unconstitutionally because legally they have no civil rights until they step on to, you know, step across and into our borders. This is absolute lunacy. And this is the type of thing that the United States Supreme Court needs to be rapidly involved in overturning these ridiculous activist judges that make these decisions that are anti-Trump decisions.
Well, and by the way, it wouldn't apply to anybody already in the country. It only applies to people that would be getting visas starting now.
But they're outside of the country.
Exactly. And they would have to prove that they either have insurance or that they can financially pay for any medical need that arises. That makes common sense to me.
Oh, it certainly does. Yeah. As a matter of fact, look at all the other countries in the United States that require, outside of the United States, that require requisites before coming into the country. You have to have a bond, right? You have to have a sponsor. You have to have, you know, I think like Australia was like, you know, $200,000 or $300,000 that you had to have a bond in. Mexico, I don't think is that different, where if you're going to be a citizen of Mexico, you have to have so much money. And by the way,
right.
Mexico has nationalized their healthcare system. And by the way, to say something nice about Mexico, from everything we've heard, because we are in Mexico part-time, it's a great medical system. And that's why you find a lot of Canadians and United States expats going to Mexico, and it's under a thousand bucks a year. I think it's like $900 a year in the medical.
But we have to pay for it.
And the medical services.
So we don't get it for free.
Right, but the medical service in Mexico are fantastic.
Well, I want to switch gears here, Ron. I want to talk
sure.
about another thing that really frosts my socks. Is so you know that Katie Hill, the California Democrat, resigned under. She admitted that she had had affairs with another woman
and a man.
But what makes me mad about this, and she should have resigned. Okay, so she went against the ethics of her job, and she should have resigned, and she did. Okay, did she take personal responsibility?
Absolutely
no.
not. Did you watch her speech?
No,
I saw her speech. Okay, so she gives a going out the door speech in front of Congress, and it was the most narcissistic, self-serving, chewing out Congress for having a double standard. Okay, but I want to say something, mm-hmm. because it was more, from my understanding, okay, it was more than just having the extramarital affair, which actually partially was with consent, because the husband,
sure, it was with
initially,
consent.
It was like a mm-hmm. threesome, foursome, you know, kind of thing.
But it was one of her aides. That was the problem.
Well, yeah, but to me, it was more than just picking on an aide. There was payments given, to what I understand,
yes.
from her campaign coffers to these people, which is a violation of the House ethics rules. So it wasn't just the issue, you know, her so-called argument that this is a double standard when other men do this or when other straight people do this because she's openly bisexual, you know, that's one issue. But she forgot the whole thing about, hey, I also paid these people.
Right, and she blamed other people for outing her on this, but actually it was her ex-husband,
yeah,
or her soon-to-be ex-husband.
Congressional people
yeah,
didn't
it
do
wasn't,
that.
It wasn't any political thing. It was her ex who did this. So, but the thing that really makes me angry is that you have Ocasio-Cortez coming out, and defending her. And here's what she said. She said, to all the women and girls out there, do not be deterred from pursuing your dreams. We must and will create a society where you cannot be defamed, smeared, and kept from your career aspirations because of smear campaigns. Here is the hypocrisy with this. This was not a smear campaign to this lady. She chose to take nude photos. Yes, they got out. But if you make that choice, that's, you know, your photos never go away. So you want to put stuff on the internet, it's going to probably get out. Nobody set out to smear this woman. She created her own situation and she paid for it. For Ocasio-Cortez to say that it was a smear campaign is just ludicrous. And if not only she, but Ilhan Omar said the same thing. And what's ludicrous about it is here are two other women, Omar and Cortez, who also have ethics violations against them. Ocasio-Cortez with finances and with being dishonest about finances. And Ilhan Omar has a list a mile long. And by the way, Judicial Watch is really after her for this thing about marrying her brother. They say that they have the proof. They lay out everything that she did. And then she has an affair with another woman's husband, right?
Correct. So
these are people who are defending this woman and saying that we're all wrong.
Right.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, Anne paying him for travel and everything like that out of her campaign coffers, okay?
Yes.
Which is a house ethics violation.
And why they're still there, I don't know.
Take the whole affair and move it aside and look at what they can factually prove and what she's admitted to as insofar as paying the staffer, which was a campaign consultant, who she's having an affair with separately for travel that both of them did. Okay, that had nothing to do with the campaign. Okay,
right. Well,
so come on.
And Hill, who's blaming, who's saying that this is a double standard? So has she forgotten people like Joe Barton, Mark Souter, Christopher Lee? Who was the comedian guy that touched the woman's breast that got?
I don't even remember that.
Yeah, you know him. Tim Murphy, Anthony Weiner. I mean, all of these people. These are all men who got. Out of their job because of something to do with sex. So don't go there and say it's a double standard. Men also have fallen to the same thing. Here's the answer. If you don't want to be dismissed from your job, don't do it.
But then, you know, for God's sakes, you know, have at least the integrity and the honesty and the ethics to admit the fact that you violated, you know, house ethics rules. And they give you the rule book when you join the Congress, for God's sake. So don't tell me you don't know about this stuff. You know about it and you knowingly violated the house ethics rules. And then you turn around and you blame it on everybody else. You know, that is just, I mean, that in of itself is just underscores the fact that we have corrupt politicians in Washington. That is part of the swamp. That's part, a huge part of what needs to be changed about Washington, D.C. It's their justice and their special system against ours.
It is. And the hypocrisy of somebody like Ocasio-Cortez to defend this woman goes along with the hypocrisy that she just did with having this whole demonstration in New York against the police in New York, and then jumping over the turnstiles to get on the subway for free. And she defends them and says, just because you can't afford the $2.75 to get on the subway doesn't mean that you should be arrested. So she is encouraging people to violate the law. She's encouraging these demonstrations against police. And Queens, I mean, the people in Queens, the people in New York, in whose district she is, they have got to get a clue and get that woman out of there, because that is not the type of person that you want representing you in the Congress of America.
Well, this is a woman that just wants anarchy, for God's sake.
She does.
And I don't know, did you get a chance to look at the at the video of the people jumping over the turnstiles? Okay, well, it's only a few seconds long, but here's what I saw, because you know me. I like to forensically look at things, okay? So here's these people that are jumping over the turnstiles, and so I took the video and I slowed it down and I even stopped it. And what do I see with these people that are jumping over the turnstiles? They're wearing expensive sneakers. Okay, so they're wearing like Nike expensive, $100, $200 sneakers. They've got really nice like Audio backpacks, and they're carrying cell phones. Okay, a couple of them carrying cell phones that are fairly expensive cell phones. So these are the people that can't afford to spend, you know, $2.50 or $3 to go through the turnstile. And these are the people that the actions of the people that she ratifies, and then against the police.
Right.
Okay. And you are a person that makes laws that become the rule of law that law enforcement has to protect. I mean, I don't get it. Okay. It is so hypocritical and it's so Marxist.
Right. And as they're destroying police cars, which cost thousands of dollars for the city to have to pay
and
for,
preventing the police from going on calls. So it's not only that they're damaging the cars, but in some cases where they didn't damage the cars, the technique for the demonstrators was to find cardboard boxes and to put them all over the windshields in front of the cars and to do this so that if the officers got a call for service or they needed to go on patrol, that they had to remove all of that stuff. So what if you have a heart attack? What if you're having a medical emergency? What if you're getting the crap beaten out of you? And the police are called, and these officers have to take 5 minutes or so to clear all of that stuff. Well, you know, in cases like that, seconds matter.
Oh, absolutely.
And so what if it was your family? What if it was your kid? What if it was your husband or wife? What if it was your mom or dad that's being, you know, beaten up or robbed or having a heart attack? You just prevented those officers because of your self-serving and narcissistic, you know, behavior to going out there and saving people. I mean, if I was a police officer in New York City, I would probably pack up my stuff if I had a skill set and I would leave that city.
Yeah, and that's a shame because they are one of the best law enforcement agencies in the country.
Yeah, and you know, I want to just take just a minute to mention the fact that Donald Trump just packed up his bags, and he's leaving permanently for Florida. So he's leaving the city of New York and Manhattan, and he's moving out.
He was born there.
And raised, yep. and had his major financial accomplishments.
And has contributed so much financially to that city.
Tens, and if not hundreds of millions of dollars to that city and that tax base.
And they treat him horribly.
And he's packing up and he's leaving. And who's to blame him? And, you know, the only thing that I wished he would have done, and maybe he'll do this because he's not completely out yet, but he's en route. And that is to say, hey, look, if you're a businessman, you have a big business here. You're crazy to stay here. What are you doing staying in this state? And what are you doing staying in this city? You can go to another place. You can go to Florida like I did. You can go to Texas. You can go to other states where you're going to be appreciated and your tax dollars will be well spent. And you won't be taxed as much.
Right. Well, would you like another cup of coffee?
I sure would. Okay. And I'm really, this is a lively conversation.
Well, I have lots more to say.
Well, I'm really to hear about it.
Spreading the outlaw truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older. Until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Well, my next frost your socks moment is the fires in California. And as everybody knows, you know, we left California. And fires have always been an issue in California. And it's a dry area, and they probably will always be an issue. But a lot of what has happened with the fires, Ron, is caused by their policies. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. The state of California, sure. And, you know, I mean, full disclosure, we had a beautiful place up in the mountains near Lake Arrowhead that was threatened twice. We had a ranch in Temecula that was threatened twice. We even had our place in Lake Arrowhead and our ranch in Temecula threatened on the same day.
Right.
Okay. And it's the policies of the Democrats in California, and specifically Jerry Brown and now Gavin Newsom, that have created the problems with respect to the lack of water, right, and water resources, and then also the failure to cut the dead trees and dead brush in these high-risk fire areas that have created this problem.
Right. And you started back with Gray Davis, a lot of this, where he totally mismanaged the water crisis.
And by the way, Gray Davis was removed from office.
Yes.
By the California residents, including us, that voted to remove him.
Yeah. And Arnold Schwarzenegger was virtually helpless in anything.
Well, helpless is a better word.
Yeah, he was helpless because the legislature was all Democrat. So everything was a stalemate, so nothing got done. Then you have Jerry Brown who came in. And in 2016, AB 1463 was passed by the voters. And that was passed unanimously in the House and in Congress. So I won't say by the voters. And that what that was supposed to do was to have brush cleared from all of the areas around the poles, the power poles.
And the transmission lines. Right, because these generators or these transformers, when they're struck, especially by lightning, okay, and we just had one on our property, you know, very recently, get hit by lightning, and of course, bam, they explode, and it's very easy to start a fire. So what AB, 1463 did was laid aside money so that the areas around transmission lines and the areas around the towers that had these explosive transformers could be cleared to mitigate the fire potential.
And Jerry Brown vetoed it.
That's right. After bipartisan support,
yes,
in the assembly, the governor, for God knows whatever reason, vetoed it.
Right. So that was not done. And this is where these fires are starting.
Absolutely.
So you can put that directly in the lap of Jerry Brown. And by the way, Jerry Brown, you know, Jerry Brown and Gavin Newsom are, again, total hypocrites. Jerry Brown's, their money from their family was made by importing oil from Indonesia.
I don't think people know that.
Yeah. So while he claimed to be an environmentalist, they made millions and millions of dollars in oil. And Gavin Newsom, his family, his father was the lawyer for the Getty family, and
correct,
he invested heavily in for the Gettys,
right,
and they invested in oil. So they're not the climate crusaders that they claim to be.
And, you know, I wanted to say, since Jerry Brown vetoed AB 1463 that we just talked about, what has Gavin Newsom done to bring AB 1463 back to the table? Because he has the ability, as the governor of the state of California, to get them to bring that back up to the table, get them to vote on it all over again, and pass that legislation.
Well, he is definitely a hypocrite, and he is Nancy Pelosi's nephew, and they're both cut from the same cloth. So, you know, PG&E has taken the blame, and yes, they are to blame in some ways. But here's what people don't hear, and what Gavin Newsom, while he's blaming Trump and everybody else for these fires, here's what they don't know, is that the California legislature, they passed an ordinance in 2015 requiring utilities to pay $100 million annually for solar systems in low-income areas. So there's $100 million of their money. Then they had to do all these other things, which they had to pay $125 million for efficiency upgrades for environmental issues. They had to pay $7.5 billion in allowances to pay for reduced emissions.
And that's B for billion, not M for million.
they had to give huge discounts to lower income people. So all of that money that PG&E would have had to fix infrastructure was being told that they had to spend it in these other areas, and they could not fix their infrastructure, which is why a lot of that happened. Now, they had to give $2.2 billion, right, in rebates to customers with rooftop solar installations. So PG&E, rather than fixing what they have, had to pay people for solar installations. So this is what you don't see on the back end, that the government in California is telling PG&E that they have to do and spend their money on. Where do you expect them to get the money to fix their infrastructure?
Okay, well, I'm going to speculate here, okay? So putting it up front, it's speculation on my part, but just watching Gavin Newsom, where do you think he's going right now with his rhetoric? He wants people in California to consider the state purchasing PG&E. So that's nationalizing a utility. Okay, so like for instance,
yes,
in Mexico, in the country of Mexico, Pemex, that's their petroleum company. But Pemex stands for Petroleum Mexicano. Okay, that's what Pemex stands for. And the Mexican government nationalized petroleum. So gas and oil, that's been nationalized. This is what Gavin Newsom wants to do. I think he's a socialist in wool's clothing, and I think he wants to nationalize PG&E as the state's sole utility. He'll work on Edison next down in Southern California, and I think once that's done, he's going to tax that utility through the roof, because people will be buying that utility. Now they will be customers of the state of California. I think he's going to tax them through the roof. And all those people that that got solar, and now it's now a state law, right? Coming into, what, 2020 or 2022, where all the new houses have got to have solar, right? They've got to have solar roofs.
Yes.
Okay? Those people that thought they're going to get rebates, and, you know, so far the people with solars, they actually get money back. That's going to go, because look what he did with the HOV cars. Look what he did with the all electric cars, the Teslas, the dual gas and electric cars that used to go for free on the HOV lanes. Now they're paying for it. Believe me, this is another way to tax everybody through the roof in California.
Well, it is, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, and I could be, but in Mexico, when they got the new president, didn't they decide to change over on Pemex because the previous administration, there was a lot of corruption?
Oh, absolutely.
In them nationalizing it.
Yeah.
And apparently a lot of people made a lot of money on it.
Oh, especially Salinas, Fox, you know, the prior president, made a tremendous amount of money. And I actually like Obregon, and the Mexicans like him very much. And I think he's got like an 85% approval rating, which is bipartisan, which is unheard of.
Well, and I think that what people need to understand in California is that Gavin Newsom is not your friend. There's nothing that he does that is for the benefit of California. He only does it for the benefit of Gavin Newsom.
Correct.
And by the way, when they've gone to him and asked for documents regarding what he's done to mitigate fire hazards and things, they have not given up the documents. Bottom line is, he's done nothing. So Californians, there's a recall ballot out there. I'd be signing that in a heartbeat if I were you.
And it's easy to get to, and you can find it on the internet as as well. The Californians really need to get rid of Governor Gavin Newsom.
Well, I want to say some good things about our president. First of all, jobs are up again. 128,000 new jobs were just added to the economy.
And people have to consider the fact that we have the strike going on in GM right now. So everybody anticipated, the economic advisors anticipated a drop in jobs. And that's not what happened. We still got another 128,000 jobs.
Yeah, and I think at some point people have to also realize that we only have 3.6% unemployment. So you can't add that many more jobs because right now we have more jobs than we do people to fill them. But yet we still keep adding jobs. The other thing that I thought was interesting was a media thing that Palmer Report, a liberal political blog, he announced that the president was golfing during the Baghdadi takedown. And that was fact-checked as a complete lie.
No, he was in the Situation Room when
he was
that
in
went
the Situation
down.
Room.
Right.
So why do these politicians put out this stuff that he's golfing during this whole event? I mean, they just can lie and people don't know. The other thing I thought was really interesting was Doug Weed is a writer who has interviewed and worked with six different presidents, okay? And he spends a good amount of time, in this case with President Trump, he spent 2 years kind of following him around, interviewing.
Is he like a biographer or something?
Well, I don't know if he's a biographer. He does write about them, so okay. I guess in some ways he is. But he wanted to add President Trump to his list of presidents that he has talked to and got an impression of, and he started dealing with him right after the election. So for 2 years, he kind of followed President Trump around, got to know the family, got to know the ins and outs. And what he said he discovered about President Trump and the family was quite different than what is reported about him. And he said that Melania and Donald Trump are not estranged, as they're often reported, that they are very tender with one another and that they tease each other. And it could be anything, that Donald Trump really values her opinion. And they talk about, as a family, what a privilege it is to serve our country, and that they have no illusions about the horror that they're going through and what people are putting them through. And that's, a lot of times President Trump will tease Melania and say, "Melania, honey, look at this incredible journey I've brought you on." And he said it's a joke between them. And, you know, he says, "Isn't this amazing?" And, you know, they laugh together because what else can they do?
Well, you know what's interesting about this comment, because this is the first I've heard you talk about this, but I like to think that we're a very happily married couple. And unless you say we're not, but
no,
we definitely are. We have a lot of friends that are happily married couples. And one of the things that happily married couples do is they tease each other, because if they don't like each other, they don't waste time teasing each other. Okay. So I just thought that was kind of cool.
Well, we banter a lot.
Yeah.
The other things he asked about in his interviews, about some of the stories, like the famous story about Bannon and Priebus and Ivanka Trump, when Bannon shouted to Ivanka, "You're just a blankety-blank staffer." And Ivanka says, "No, that never happened." Well, that book that was written in sold 100,000 copies, and it was totally false. So he spent just a great deal of time with people. He outlines in his story a lot of the falsities that have been told about the president, and about, you know, like how he hired Mike Pence and all. Everybody's got their story, but he really is telling the true story. And the thing that struck me about this overall is he said there's two kinds of staffers. Well, he didn't say, Jared Kushner said, those who want to help Trump save the world and those who want to help save the world from Trump. Doug Weed said at the end was, he's the sixth president I've interviewed, and I came away impressed. Some will say that he's only lucky. He was lucky to win the nomination in the election. He was lucky to see what every great economist in the world had missed about the GDP, lucky at finding jobs that no one else could find, lucky at bringing back hostages that other presidents had left languishing in foreign prisons, lucky at achieving energy independence, lucky at defeating ISIS so easily. He said Trump is the first president in 40 years to avoid starting a hot war. You can say he's lucky. I say he's great. And I think that, I mean, it gives me goosebumps because here's a man who spent 2 years with him and got the real story, understands the family, sees the truth, and I wish the American people could see it. And one more thing I want to say, not about this, but that I forgot to tell you, is also besides the jobs being added, home interest rates went down again. And our daughter-in-law is in the mortgage business, and she says it is rocking right now.
You know, that's really incredible. You know, say what you want about Donald Trump, and every once in a while I kind of shake my head when he does something, you know, with his Twitter account that, you know, I disapprove of. But let me tell you why I like this guy. I like this guy because he's a fighter. I like this guy because he loves America. He loves the military. He loves law enforcement. He loves the American people. He's a billionaire. He could be doing a lot of other things, but he decided to, as he jokingly says, take his family on this amazing journey, which has been probably the worst journey that you could wish upon anybody. Okay, just the worst journey. And the guy is the most resilient guy. He compartmentalizes all these horrible things and these lies that people talk about him and his family. And the guy just comes back and he's a counterpuncher. But he's fighting for what is right. This is a guy that truly believes, as I do, as you do, that every single day we are in a fight against evil that wants to destroy what the United States of America is all about. Our value system, our spirit, our ethos of patriotism.
Our Constitution.
And that is why they're fighting them so hard, because they want that to continue. They want the corruption, the swamp on both sides to continue. They want to continue being the political elite,
yes,
the ruling class, and Donald Trump is not about that.
I totally agree. I totally agree with you, and that's a whole nother conversation I'd love to have, because you said a lot of important things.
Well,
in
you
that
know,
statement.
we could have an entire another dinner conversation just on that subject alone.
We can, but what I just want to point out to you in closing, because we're almost finished with our coffee, but next time we might try something new, because Coca-Cola has come out with two new holiday flavors, and I thought it was really interesting. One is cinnamon Coca-Cola.
Oh.
And one is winter spice cranberry Coca-Cola.
If they came out with sort of a pumpkin spice Coca-Cola.
Oh, that sounds awful.
I don't know. It works well in my coffee, though. I'm drinking that right now. Okay.
But what I'm understanding is that these flavors are really good. Now, I'm not a Coke drinker. I'm more of a 7-Up Sprite kind of drinker. But I thought it would be really interesting to try these.
Hey, you know what? And I just want to finish our coffee conversation by telling you that this is the 120th Talking While Married program, and it's been so far an amazing journey with you. So thanks for spending time with me every night and drinking coffee with me and bantering.
Well, regardless of Talking While Married or not, we're going to do this same thing every day of our lives as we always have. So we might as well share it.
And thanks for being my partner.
Well, thank you right back.